Road.
Would you like to come and stall it?
Ah, will you just stall it, look?
I'd like to come and stall it.
I'm not really in the mood.
Well, come on and bleed and stall it.
Yeah, house hatcher. I'm not a house hatcher.
We'll stall it for a crack. We're going in.
Welcome back to another deep dive episode of the Charles Manson special.
Episode four.
We're getting into it now.
It's happening. We're here.
People are dead now. Yeah.
That happened for episode one.
People are dying all the time.
Thank you for the coffee, by the way.
You got it.
You paying for a coffee?
Yeah.
You
got mine as well.
He's about welcome.
Jesus. I'm suspicious now.
Drink it all to the bottom. Speaking of drinking the Kool-Aid.
Nice.
What does that term mean?
It's related to another cult. Jim Jones was his name.
And when you drink the Kool-Aid, does that mean
you die?
Yeah, 800 people or something.
But you drink it knowing you're going to die.
I don't think they knew they were going to die. Jonestown Massacre, it's called.
It was all laced.
Wow.
Blake.
And on that note, this episode is the one where we go through what happened on the nights of the killings. So, a bit of a content warning. There's some stuff. I'm definitely going to skip over some really bad stuff. Because I just don't think, not to like censor from people.
The type of podcast.
But exactly. You need the details though. The devil's in the details.
Read the fucking
There's plenty
book,
of devil
then.
In it. Read the book. We're not sparing the details. I'm going to leave in a lot because you have to know just how bad it was what they did.
Okay.
Because it's kind of central to the story that they went there to play the big scene.
I don't know what happened, so it's important for me to understand or else I'd be a Charles Manson fan.
I know all of it.
All of the details.
Yeah, so everything he's saying, I just knew it already. Like so.
Mm-hmm. Read all the books.
Read the books, yeah.
So where were we? At the end of episode 3, you'll remember they were on Spawn Ranch and things started getting... Mm-hmm. More serious. Manson was getting more paranoid. They had...
Wasn't washing. Had one bat.
Yes.
And your man came, remember?
Yeah, he had the bat. He had the failed audition. Terry Melcher, first of all, he showed up and then... Or no, he didn't show up and then he showed up. There was the ridiculous audition where the studio driver, owner, studio owner fan, he took LSD.
Freaked out.
Tried to kill Manson with a pitchfork. At the end of the last episode...
Did you laugh at killing someone with a pitchfork?
He
tried to kill him with a pitchfork.
He was out of head, like. Just to be that out of head.
That whole scene was pretty funny.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
The fella on LSD tried to kill Charles Manson with a pitchfork?
Yeah.
That's gas.
It was Charles Manson he was trying to kill.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway.
Murder is murder, no? Come on.
And then at the end, there was the... drug dealer robbery that went wrong. Tech stole all the money from lots of papa.
Oh, he went and they went and shot him in the stomach.
Yeah, and they thought he was with the Black Panthers. He wasn't, but this accelerated Manson's thinking that, you know.
This is it.
And then, in an attempt to make money, there was the whole thing with Bobby Beausoleil, who was kind of a Manson family associate. And he went off to either... differing accounts, but either kind of settle an issue with his friend Gary Hinman. There was the issue with the mescaline, the bikers.
Bobby Boucher.
Or some people say he just went
that
robbing.
Girl is the devil. Sorry, go on.
Some people say he just went to rob him on behalf
Bobby
of Charles
Manson. Bobby Beausoleil reference was ages ago.
Oh, no, I was
well.
Just thinking about it. I was like, when will I just come in here and say that?
Cause just waiting for your moment.
Because I want to say that. Like.
So the last we heard was... Bobby Beausoleil.
Huh? The devil. That girl is the devil. You could say that about Charles Manson, though.
That boy is the devil.
I don't want you playing around with them. That boy the devil. Oh, that sounds like one of them things that I just really want to keep saying. Like impulse, like just to keep saying that now for the rest of the episode. But I won't.
Don't do that.
Oh.
Fight the urge.
And
like,
so...
You have a vein there, and it's like it's because you want to say the devil.
I'm not... Just go on.
Do you want to get one more out of your system?
It has to be a good one.
Go on.
Go on, go for it. Give us socks.
God damn it. That girl is the devil.
Nice.
Was that good?
It was too much.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
It was too much.
Anyway, the episode ended with...
Film, where that's from.
Little Nicky or something, isn't it?
No.
Waterboy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Waterboy.
Yeah.
I knew it was one of them Adam Sandler films.
What's your favourite Adam Sandler?
Let's do a deep dive on Adam Sandler.
Imagine we just did.
Bobby Bosley killed his friend Gary. And now he's
We were having fun.
I had to put us off to it. So, Bobby killed Gary.
My turtle's name is Gary.
Manson and others were there. And then, a week or so later, he's driving Gary Hinman's car and he gets pulled over and the murder weapon's in the car and he gets arrested.
Yeah.
To continue our story...
Bobby gets arrested.
Bobby gets arrested.
Okay.
So, August 8th. So this is the day of, essentially, even though the murders happened slightly after midnight. We're a few hours before.
The Tate?
The murders are just a few hours away now. The Tate murders.
Okay, right.
Charles Manson comes back to Spawn Ranch after, I don't know, he was out and about. And he comes back and he hears Bobby has been arrested. He's in jail. And he's been charged with the murder of Gary Hinman. So obviously Manson was fuming at this. He had been there when all this went down. He didn't kill Gary Hinman, but he had cut him with a sword. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't blameless in any way. But also, just in general, he was worried. You know, Bobby might say he won't speak, but the longer he's in there, the more likely he is to start talking about what is going on here at the ranch.
Mm.
And this bit is one of the key points that's debated, because this is where Manson tells them, helter skelter, it's happening. And the debate is, did he just... kind of get so frustrated with different things that he said, right, this helter skelter prophecy isn't going to happen on its own. We have to do it. Or the other theory, and there is a lot to back this up from different sources, but the other theory is that even before Manson got back there, the family started speaking about the need to help Bobby. And
is there a theory that like he didn't believe all this and he was just like making them believe it and like he was just like,
yep,
just doing it for the sake of it?
Yeah. Lots of people believe that, yeah.
I kind of believe that that's what he did.
He just master manipulator.
Like, obviously, he's mad, like, insane, but, like, is he insane on the level of, like, believing things that aren't, like, you know, like psychosis or something, or just, like, schizophrenic? Like, he doesn't have that in his mind. He knew what he was doing, like.
Like, he didn't believe the shit that he was saying.
He was telling them all this shit, but he didn't believe it himself, like.
Very possible, yeah.
Did I come up with a new theory?
No.
The Conway theory.
Release the foils.
Manson was just a spoofer. He was a waffler.
The family are on the ranch, and so according to some people, they were talking beforehand, like before Manson even got back, and we're saying what we need to do is go out and do a copycat murder. Because you'll remember at the Gary Hinman murder, they had written
pigs.
Yeah, political piggy.
With his blood.
Yeah, they'd written political piggy on the wall in his blood, and they thought, well, if we stage a similar scene, then someone investigating that will go, oh, well, these must be the same people who did both these crimes, and therefore Bobby Bosley couldn't have done the first one because he was in prison when the second one happened. That's one theory, that the whole of what was to follow was just to help out Bobby Bosley. The other theory is the pure helter-skelter one, I suppose you'd call it, where it's like Manson just said, right, that's it. This is the moment. The idea that the race war is going to start on its own, that ain't happening. So we've got to go out and do something to shock it into life.
This is all on August 8th.
This is August 8th, yeah. Also that day, two of the Manson family women, Mary Brunner and Sandra Good, they had been arrested using a stolen credit card. All of this, the three of them being arrested, Manson is just furious.
The walls.
I was looking at photos of the Manson family, just curiosity, just to put an image on them. While we're talking about it, and they all have big mad unibrows. Like, notice that?
Didn't take care of themselves.
Nothing wrong with it.
Nobody said there was. Anyway, Manson was so upset that he went away and punched a tree.
That's like something I'd do.
Hmm. And again, this kind of is just, was he just so wound up? He was like, I need to do something. I'm sick of waiting around for something to happen.
Sounds spoiled.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of people who make the very good case that, like, he's just an egotistical brat.
Maniac.
Yeah, he just wanted everything to go his own way, and when it didn't,
he punches trees.
He hurt people.
He's like, no.
He was a pathetic man who preyed on vulnerable people.
Yeah.
That's one painting of him, I suppose. So Manson and Tex Watson go off and have a chat. Tex Watson, actually, I got it wrong.
What a chat. Tex.
I got it wrong in a previous episode. I said Tex was a certain person in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's not. Adam Driver is Tex Watson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Great actor. It's good soup.
So Manson says to Tex, he's like, you know, if we hadn't had all the problems with Lots of Papa, you know, we wouldn't have been in a situation where Gary ended, or Bobby ended up out of Gary's house. And you know, really, Tex, you're the one who caused all these problems, which may have been unfair on Tex. But anyway, and Tex, as we spoke about previously, was very keen to impress, which is why he initiated the whole Lots of Papa drug deal to try and steal 25 grand from Lots of Papa for Manson. So Manson told him it's his time to step up. Tex had taken a lot of acid, as you'd imagine, and speed that day. So he was well up.
What would that do to you?
Oof.
You'd be fucking
speed and acid.
You'd probably be suggestible, I'd say.
You'd be erratic, you'd be jittery, you'd be like
punching trays.
Yeah.
There are some people who said Tex was the one who suggested going to Terry Melcher's old house.
Tex suggested it?
Yeah, it wasn't Manson who said, oh, go to Cielo Drive to Terry Melcher's old house or anything.
Well, he's off his banger.
Yeah, so there's conflicting versions of who said to go there. But I think even if Manson didn't say it, he'd very easily have led Tex down that path to the point that Tex suggested. Remember the Dale Carnegie stuff that was in Manson's philosophy? If someone believes an idea is theirs, they'll believe in it much more. So if you can make them think the idea is theirs. So that was a big part of what he would do. He wouldn't say, Tex, go to Terry Melcher's old house, but he'd say, what you need to do is something big, Tex. Find a house with famous people there, that kind of thing. And he'd know. Tex probably didn't know many of those houses. That night then, August 8th, 1969, Manson gathers Susan Atkins, also known as Sadie Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Linda Kasabian.
Kasabian.
And Tex Watson. Manson gets them all together, tells them all, get dressed in black. And
we're going out.
Well, he says you're to do it. Whatever Tex tells you to do, you're to do it. They say, yep.
And shave that uni brow.
They didn't know where they were going.
I'm not telling you what to do with them. I'm not saying to shoot. I'm just saying.
He told them exactly what to do.
No, he didn't. He just said, do what Tex tells you to do.
Oh.
So then you go back to, did Manson tell Tex or did he let Tex come to the conclusion on his own?
Tex is like, kill them, right? Well, I'm not saying do that.
Yeah.
You said it.
Here's a rope, though.
And they did later on say, Tex said that Manson told him, have the girls write witchy things on the walls.
Fella's out ahead.
So just make a big old scene wherever you go. So they set off for Cielo Drive. I think that's probably about an hour drive or so. It's a good distance. Warm night. Very warm night. In the house that evening, Sharon Tate. She's only 26. She was 8.5 months pregnant. She was from Dallas originally. She was a model. Then she got into acting. First big role was in a film called Valley of the Dolls, which was directed by Roman Polanski, who she obviously would go on to marry. After Valley of the Dolls, she was considered kind of one of Hollywood's rising stars.
Her name is Sharon Tate. She's today's kind of girl, bursting with youth, beauty, vitality, and hope. The hope was born 2 years ago at the MGM Studios in Culver City, California, in the offices of producer...
Have you any idea what it is they saw in you, besides your obvious beauty, of course? Mm-hmm.
What? This is a mistake I think most young girls make when they want to go into an acting career. When a producer or somebody sees them, they have a fresh, natural quality that no one has touched. It's something that's them. And so when a person starts their acting classes or whatever, they get an idea of what I think a starlet is. And the hair goes up in whirls, the dresses, the clothes change, and unfortunately their whole personality changes. So my idea is the full-time job is to learn your craft and also to try to keep yourself what you really are.
Some of the European papers have been calling you the new Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, dear.
What do you think of that?
I love Marilyn Monroe, but it would be kind of difficult for me to be another Marilyn Monroe, I think.
Do you think you could...
She had married Polanski just the year before, very famous as this big Hollywood power couple. Everything I've seen about her, people say she had no real ego about her, no vanity, despite being considered one of the most, you know, beautiful women in Hollywood. She was very nice, very down to earth, very generous, caring, you know, towards other people. people said she didn't let the fame go to her head. She's actually portrayed in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, she's Margot Robbie plays her.
Mm.
And she's portrayed as this very sweet, not innocent, but very sweet, genuine person. Also there was Sharon's friend and her former boyfriend, Jay Sebring. He was a very famous celebrity hairstylist. He had been in the US Navy in the Korean War, came back, moved to LA. I don't know exactly how this works, but basically, apparently, he revolutionized men's grooming in America.
Who did?
Jay Sebring.
Men's grooming? Like
hair grooming?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you meant,
like,
yeah.
So, like, I'm not sure exactly how this worked. I had enough to look into without delving into what this meant. Well, basically, he was the hairstylist to the male stars of Hollywood. And, I don't know, came up with some new, more modern look. What we'd probably consider more modern now. He was the barber to Steve McQueen, Paul Newman, Warren Beatty.
The Great Escape.
He'd worked with Frank Sinatra and Elvis.
Oh.
This fellow was top tier.
Some barber.
He was Tate's boyfriend before she met Polanski. She left him to
go with
Roman Polanski.
And he's still chilling?
They were still very good friends. Apparently himself and Polanski got on like a house on fire. A great mate.
He was in the weird shit.
They're all fucking probably going to believe cook. Them big culty Hollywood parties and
yeah.
Oh, when we get to alternative theories, Dennis Hopper has one for you in that vein.
Love it.
We'll get there.
I'm really letting myself go, aren't I?
The late Dennis Hopper.
Even lending an ear to this late, great conversation. Dennis Hopper. Let alone speaking of cults and fucking on myself.
Also there was 32-year-old Wojciech Frykowski. He was Roman Polanski's friend, originally from Poland. And his girlfriend, Abigail Folger, she was 25. She was the heiress to the Folger's coffee fortune.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Mm.
What's that?
One of the big coffee companies in America.
Still is. It's like,
what's it called?
Folger's. Folgers or whatever.
Yeah.
You get that here?
It's like Nescafe or something. It's massive.
It's not here though, is it?
She worked as a volunteer with social programs. She was a social worker helping people from disadvantaged areas and that kind of thing. And she worked with charities. That's what she would do for her time.
Sounds like a nice person.
Yeah. Frykowski was an actor. He was born in Poland. No.
So he was one of them.
He was Polanski's friend. He was kind of part of the scene in Poland when Polanski was coming up. And apparently Polanski was a really big deal in Poland. He was very good friends with Polanski and he moved to LA to try and break into the movie scene in LA. Also there was the caretaker, William Garrison. I don't think he was even really like what you'd call a proper caretaker. He was just there looking after the house because the owner was away. And he was only 19 and he was in the guest house behind the main house. Also one of those killed that night, and he was on the property when the Manson family arrived, was Stephen Parent. He was only 18 and he'd gone over to the house because he wanted to sell Garrison his clock radio. Garrison wasn't interested in the clock radio.
Did he end up getting chopped up as well?
He did.
That's bad timing.
Sure.
Hey!
Lads. I think if we're going to make a joke, do it earlier on, not at this moment.
Yeah, I think this is not the time for.
Hey!
fucking hell.
Yes. I'll have to hand you that one. Okay.
Round of applause. No.
What?
You stomp your hands and wave. What were you saying?
It was all clock puns.
I wanted to give you a bit of background info on all of the victims because we are a comedy podcast spending a lot of time talking about basically the murders of completely innocent people. I thought it'd be in nice taste and the decent thing to do. What are you doing? You've lost yourselves in puns.
He's
clock puns.
Door to door selling this fucking clock.
No, he wasn't going door to door. He knew them.
I did say now that they sound like lovely people.
Do you know who else said they were supposed to be there that night but wasn't?
Who?
Quincy Jones.
Who's that?
The producer.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Jackson's producer.
Quincy Jones, yeah. He does be on The Voice and all. Is he alive?
Okay.
Yes.
A lot of the detail of what happened, I mean, all the detail obviously comes from members of the Manson family. A lot of the detail seems to come from Tex Watson's book.
He has a book?
Well, I mean, his testimony. His testimony and his book. Yeah, he testified at the trial and then he wrote a book saying pretty much the same thing, I think. It's called Will You Die For Me? And if you Google it, you can get it for free online.
For free?
I didn't read the whole of Tex's book, but I just kind of skimmed it and I read the account of the murders. But I do know he did express remorse for what he'd done later on in his life. But I don't know, when you read the stories about the murders, it's very graphic. Doesn't feel it. There's a lot of remorse in it.
Yeah,
anyway,
I googled it.
Did you?
It's grim, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bleak.
What happened?
It kind of describes it though, to the best that you could, really.
Yeah, it's a very vivid picture, isn't it? Like, yeah, he goes into a lot of all the detail.
Yeah. Is he still locked up now? Is he not still?
Yeah. Tex Watson and the three women arrive at Cielo Drive just after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So Tex says to the girls, they were there because they were going to go into this house and kill everyone inside. This was news to the girls in the car. They had not been aware of this. They Manson know. Said you to do what Tex tells you. So they drive off. They get there.
And they... I just picture them in the back. Like, just going, what?
Yeah, what?
What do you mean?
No, well, because Manson had said, do whatever Tex tells you, they all went, okay, Tex.
Just like automatic.
Yeah.
Are you obedient?
Tex climbs up a telephone pole near the entrance gate. He cuts the phone lines to the house.
Lights go out. That's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It is. Then they reverse the car back down the hill, put it out of sight a bit, and they get out and they walk back up to the house. They climb up a little bushy hill on the side of the gate to get over that because they think there might be an alarm or something like that, so it sneak past that just in case. They get onto the driveway. As they're walking up the driveway, headlights of a car start coming towards them. Tex steps out in front of it. It's 18-year-old Stephen Parent, who just called over to try and sell his clock radio to William Garrison. Don't.
Just waiting for him. Did Tex kill him?
He did. He
chopped his hand off, did he?
He stabbed him and he shot him.
And was he just like, he was going to the gaff, was he?
He was just called in for a little while, and it was just a coincidence. Just a bad coincidence.
You were going to say bad timing.
Stephen Parent, he basically pleads with him, says, please don't hurt me. I won't.
Is he only 18?
Yeah.
He's like, that's sad, isn't
it? I won't tell anyone you're here. I presume he thought they were there to rob the place. Like, please just let me go.
Was he an actor?
No, he was just normal kid. Tex says to Linda Kasabian, she was fairly new
I'm
to the
on fire,
I was fucking waiting ages thinking of a Kasabian song.
She's fairly new to the group, but she's been sent here because I think she was the only Manson family member with a driver's license. Mary Brunner had one, but she'd been locked up that day, so that later became the theory. What?
They're not completely lunatics. They're not going to drive her out with a fucking driver's license. They're literally about to put, she has to go with you. She's the one with the license.
They're all dressed in black in a car with knives and guns. If you get stopped, make sure you have a license. Well, I suppose it wouldn't make sense. Otherwise, then search the car. He tells her to go up and look for an open window or whatever. And she sees a couple, but she actually doesn't tell him because at this stage she's feeling like, oh, I don't want this. This is not good. Then he says to her, you go stand watch down the driveway. The rest of them walk up. Tex cuts a screen on the window. He climbs in through the window. He goes around to the front door, opens it, lets Susan Atkins and Patricia Krenwinkel come in. Frykowski is asleep on the couch. You probably remember this from the start of the first episode. Tex Watson kicks him in the head. Frykowski wakes up and goes, who are you? And he says, I'm the devil and I'm here to do the devil's business.
I remember that.
Oh, that's the very first one. The first line you said, wasn't it?
Pretty much.
And is that now?
That's now. We're back around there.
Fucking wait ages to get there.
Right.
You done that well though.
Thank you.
Were you thinking, how will I intro this and bring that back? And you know,
yeah,
it was clever. Pretty nicely.
Full circle.
Tex says to Susan Atkins, go and check the other room, see who's there.
What time was it?
After midnight. Susan Atkins actually goes to the room where Abigail Folger is. Abigail Folger is sitting on a bed, I think she's reading a book or something. Susan Atkins looks in. Abigail Folger looks up and sees her and just waves. The house was that kind of house where that many people came and went. It wouldn't be weird for a randomer to be there. I find that very chilling.
Wasn't it the same with the Beach Boys though as well? Like...
Yeah, same vibe. Anyone can show up and hang around. But I just find that.
Where was she? In the room?
Yeah. Then Atkins went and looked in the next room. She saw Tate and Jay Sebring. They were sitting on the bed. They didn't see her.
Were they looking for anyone in particular?
Well.
Bit of a statement.
That's not clear, is it?
Doesn't seem they were, no.
What's the motive, though? What,
like, they were just told to kill everyone in the house. Or they went there with that idea.
Is it just because your man lived there?
Terry Melcher.
It's his gaff, like.
It's Terry Melcher, the record producer, used to live there, yeah. And that's one of the theories, that Manson did it to send a message to Terry Melcher or something like that. We'll come back to that in more detail later on.
Okay.
Because it is contested. They get them out of the bedrooms. They tie Sharon Tate and Jay Sebring together. Yeah, it's from now on, it gets pretty bad.
Mm. Okay, I'll stop making jokes.
Then they threw the rope over one of the beams in the ceiling. They had these big, thick wooden beams. It's like, as if they're like about to hang the two of them. Sebring starts protesting, trying to protect Sharon Tate. So Tex shoots him.
Shoots him?
Shoots him.
Dead.
Didn't kill him. He starts stabbing him. Oh. And I think like Sharon Tate and Abigail Folger, like they said, like they're trying to give them money. They're like, I have money in the person and whatever. And Sharon Tate asks Tex Watson, like, what are you going to do? And he says, well, you're all going to die. Like that. Can you imagine the fear?
Yeah. Terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying.
Just looking at her photo, like a headshot. It's very sad. Like, cause
she's 26 and she's 8.5 months pregnant.
Yeah, horrifying.
Jeez, I forgot about that.
Horrifying.
Frykowski actually frees himself, struggles with Susan Atkins and makes a run for it. He gets out the front door, but Tex catches up with him and he hits him over the head with the butt of the gun. There was a pistol they had and he hit him over the head. It actually broke the gun, which will prove to be one of the very few pieces of evidence left behind was the bits of the gun.
Oh.
But then they kill him outside the front door. They shoot him and stab him. Linda Kasabian would later say she heard this horrible stuff going on. She then went up towards the house. Susan Atkins was outside, I think. She says, Susan Atkins, someone's coming, because she was trying to get them to stop and get them to leave. Didn't work. Abigail Folger also escapes their clutches. Abigail Folger gets away from Patricia Krenwinkel. She runs out a bedroom door, gets to the pool area again. They catch her and kill her. Between Tex and Krenwinkel, they stabbed her 28 times.
Whoa.
Like, stuff like that. It's...
Yeah.
It feels like it's almost too much to hear, but it's important to know. This was absolutely frenzied madness. That's all this was. Frykowski was stabbed 51 times.
What the fuck, like?
Tex hit him 13 times over the head with the gun. Like,
that's
horrific.
That's not even just killing someone, isn't it? It's like...
That's it. Yeah. They were just there to kill everyone. They could have just gone in and just shot everyone. But obviously they wanted to make this loud statement. This is when it gets very sad. Tate was pleading. She offered to... Susan Atkins was kind of the one who had cornered Sharon Tate, and she was saying to her, just take me as a hostage and wait until my baby's born and then you can kill me.
Oh, God.
Susan Atkins apparently actually considered this. Like, oh, wouldn't Charlie love that? But said, oh, no, we were told just to kill everyone in the house. Susan Atkins mocked her while she was pleading for her life and for her baby's life. Like, Susan Atkins was out of all the Manson family, she seems to have been the, up there anyway, the most depraved evil.
Sick.
She was mocking her. She later on, she would boast about it. She said she saw Tate as nothing more than a store mannequin. And she got sick of listening to her plead for her life, so she killed her. Absolutely callous. Not even a shred of humanity. Nothing. Yeah, she laughed. She told Sharon Tate her kid was going to die and she laughed. Again, to be the person who's the victim of this.
Mm.
Worse than your worst nightmare. And so anyway, at this stage, they've killed them all and they leave. And they're actually on the way back to the car. They remembered that Manson had told them to leave something witchy. So they went back to the house and Susan Atkins dipped a towel in Sharon Tate's blood and wrote pig on the front door. Just as one sad last note. But, you know, I think it's important. Sharon Tate was buried with the body of her unborn son in her arms. They called him Paul Richard Polanski. And they're buried together.
Last awards.
That's pretty sad.
Bleak.
They get back to the ranch and they tell Manson they did something to make him proud. This absolutely gruesome murder. Manson probably wasn't happy. Like, you should have stolen loads of money. You weren't supposed to stop at one. You were supposed to go and do this in a few houses. Next night, the four from the Tate murders, plus a couple of others, Leslie Van Houten, Clem Grogan, and Manson himself this time, they go out. Manson was feeling very dissatisfied with how things had gone the previous night, beyond not getting money or whatever, but he felt it wasn't weird enough. They had to go further. Also, obviously, the following morning, news had broken.
In a scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird religious rite, five persons, including actress Sharon Tate, were found dead at the home of Miss Tate and her husband, screen director Roman Polanski. Miss Tate, who starred in Valley of the Dolls, was 8 months pregnant and was found in a bikini-type nightgown with a rope around her neck attached to the body of a man. Among the other victims were Hollywood hairstylist Jay Sebring and coffee heiress Abigail Folger. Authorities would allow no one in an unofficial capacity inside the posh $200,000 home in the hills overlooking Los Angeles. When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines cut. The bodies had been dead about 12 hours. They were discovered this morning by a maid who ran screaming to neighbors. One officer summed up the murders when he said, "In all my years, I have never seen anything like this before."
Is there anything scrawled on the front door of that house in blood?
I can't answer that question. You have any kind of an idea who might have done it? Do you have any kind of APBs out? Any suspects at all?
No. The only person we have at this time is Mr. Gerritsen, whom we are questioning because he was on the premises this morning when the maid arrived. So why is this case more complicated than other cases that you can't comment on it? Well, what's the difference in this case? Well, how many cases and how many times do you have five persons that are found murdered at the same time?
How they die.
This is a huge story. And they're all back at Spahn Ranch and they're watching the TV and all the news reports coming in. Some of them anyway are watching TV. It's going to become apparent later on that not all of them knew what had been going on, or they wouldn't know until a good bit later. So they couldn't all have been sitting around the TV watching it that day or discussing it anyway. But anyway, there's a crowd of them, the inner circle maybe, and they're sitting around watching the news about the murders. And Manson, he is sitting there and going, why is nobody mentioning the Black Panthers? He was aghast. He was shocked, disgusted. We've done all this. Nobody's picked up on the Black Panthers thing. So he's like, right, we didn't do it right. So we're going to go and do it again. And so he gets them in a car. Linda Kasabian is driving again. Tells her to drive to a place called Waverly Drive. More of kind of like a middle class area, not the Hollywood Hills. It was next door to a house where Manson and the family had gone to a party the previous year.
Was this the next night?
Yeah, this is the following night, yeah. The house where the party had been on was just some fella who's kind of irrelevant to the story. But that house with the party was next door to the house where previously Phil Kaufman had lived. Remember Phil Kaufman? He was a record producer. He was the guy who was in prison with Manson.
Oh, yeah.
And encouraged Manson to pursue a music career. He was the driver for the Rolling Stones. He's the fella who had that mad story about driving his friend's or stealing his friend's body and driving it out to Joshua Tree. Johnny Knoxville made a film about it.
I remember you saying it, yeah.
So there is kind of this theory that both murders were just Manson being pissed off at his music career and just went to homes of, or homes close to homes of, record producers who he felt had done him wrong.
Mm.
So maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe it's just, another theory is Manson just didn't know every kind of half decent house was a rich person's house to him, and he knew these two houses because he'd been there before. It could have been that simple. So in the house were 44-year-old Lino LaBianca and his wife, 43-year-old Rosemary. They've just come home from a holiday very late that night. They've actually stopped on the way and picked up newspapers and read all about the Tate murders. They go home and Rosemary goes to bed. Lino sits up on the couch reading the paper, falls asleep. The family get there to the house. Manson and Tex go up. They go in. They wake up Lino on the couch. They tie his hands together. They get Rosemary out of the bedroom. Manson leaves and sends some of the women back in. Yeah, he sent Krenwinkel and Van Houten back into the house. Then himself and a couple others in the car drive off. Leaves the three of them in the house. And they go in and probably more of a grisly scene. Deliberately trying to outdo themselves the previous night. They left a big fork, like a barbecue fork, in Lino Labianca's stomach and a steak knife in his throat.
Jesus.
This was all, it was, they were trying to...
Imagine reading the paper about the previous night and then the same thing happening to you. Like,
yeah. They carved war into his stomach.
War?
Yeah. Now, it may have been done, I think it was done after he was dead. But still.
These are just random attacks.
Yeah. I mean, the LaBianca's had absolutely nothing to do with the Manson family in any way previously.
What is it, just for them, their motive just to kill everyone?
Yeah.
And anyone? Or?
Just shock. The original, pure, kind of full official helter-skelter theory, it was just an attempt to shock the white population into believing it was black people and that would kind of cascade into the race war. Yeah. And then there's all the other theories that it was much more practical. It was Manson pissed off his music career. It was the whole lot of them trying to cover for Bobby Beausoleil and get him out of prison. Nothing to do with the race war. You know, they wrote Rise and Death to Pigs on the walls in blood. And then Helter Skelter, although they misspelt it. They put an A in Helter on the fridge door. Before they left, they ate some watermelon and drank some chocolate milk that they got from the fridge. And they left the watermelon rinds in the sink.
Hungry walk, but dark.
Yes, yeah. Manson drives away with the three other family members who had, there was seven who left the ranch that night. Three went into the house. Manson and three others drive off. They stop somewhere. Manson bought them a round of milkshakes.
They love that milk.
Having sent his squad out to do another horrendous job.
The same night?
Yeah, while they're in the LaBianca house, butchering everyone, Manson brings the rest of them out for milkshakes.
Mad bastard.
And there were seven of them. What did he go out in? Like a fucking van?
No, I think it was a pretty small car.
Like a load of
clown car.
Clowns in the squeeze.
Then they went for a walk on the beach. Then they drove around a bit more and went to the area, the Venice area of LA. Manson says, can anyone know anyone around here? And Linda Kasabian says, oh, I know a guy who's an actor. Manson says, great. Let's drive to his house. They get there and he says, right, go in and kill him.
Fuck off.
Yep. Linda Kasabian would later say they were on the way to his apartment and she deliberately knocked on the wrong apartment door to bring out someone else to wake a stranger, and they all abandoned it. Susan Atkins took a shit on the stairs on the way out though.
Dirty bastard.
Yeah. They're the murders, the Tate LaBianca murders. Pretty gruesome. Pretty horrendous stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously the next day, absolutely huge news. Polanski's housekeeper, Winfred Chapman, she gets there and raises the alarm. She sees this awful scene. Within a couple of hours, the word is out. The media are at the surrounding the house. Roman Polanski, who's over in London, he's been called and told. Yeah, as I said, the Manson family are watching the news reports and Manson disgusted. There's no mention of the Black Panthers. Hollywood goes into complete panic mode. Guns and guard dog sales shoot up. Following March 1970, a journalist called William Cloman wrote an article in Esquire magazine, and he said, in the great houses of Bel Air, terror sends people flying to their telephones when a branch falls from a tree outside.
So a branch fell down and everyone lost their mind?
Not literally, he's just...
They're coming for us! Like a drug dealer in a restaurant and they hear a play falling on the ground and they're like...
Exactly. Thank you for that. A branch fell.
That was a bit of a weird...
That's what you said. That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought you always.
Oh, the branch falling thing.
Literally,
like, yeah. He's paranoid. Just say he's paranoid. Like,
what? Okay. they weren't just afraid of like them being attacked in their homes. They were also getting very paranoid about who the police were going to come and talk to next. So there was another quote from around the time. It was one Hollywood insider said to Life magazine, "Toilets are flushing all over Beverly Hills. The entire Los Angeles sewer system is stoned."
Oh. So we're all flushing the coke.
Everyone's just paralyzed. Like, who knows when the cops are going to show up and question the next person.
Wow.
Yeah. Frank Sinatra was reported to have gone into hiding.
Because he thought he was on a big list?
Yep. Steve McQueen got himself a shotgun and a pistol. So he had the pistol under his pillow and the shotgun under the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was very paranoid.
Well, you would be.
It would be, yeah. Hmm.
I would have just got windows installed instead of these cloth windows that he had.
And locked
just
their doors.
Flashy on it, the way door, yeah. Bulletproof windows.
Yeah. Yeah, people didn't really lock their doors. That was actually Craig Jacobson, who we talked about before. I think Craig Jacobson said this. I watched an interview. There's a documentary series called American Myth. You can get the first three episodes on YouTube. That was a big kind of source for the research for this. It's very well done. There's loads of great interviews in it. Greg Jacobson is in there and he's the producer who liked Manson, one of the producers, with Dennis Wilson. He was Wilson's good friend. Anyway, he talks about how before this, you know, LA was very open. It was the kind of place where the drummer from the Beach Boys would pick up two strange hitchhikers and bring them home and leave them in his house while he went out.
Mm.
And after these killings, obviously particularly the Sharon Tate one, that changed completely. People were locking their doors. People weren't picking up hitchhikers.
Was there ever a copycat?
No.
Mm.
Well, initially they thought the LaBianca murder was a copycat. That's what the Did police they? Said. They said the Tate one was something to do with drugs. And LaBianca was a lunatic copying Tate. That was their original theory. Then, yeah, there were all sorts of theories going around. black magic rituals and all this. And the initial reports were like 20 were dead in the house and all this kind of stuff. William Garrettson, the caretaker, was obviously the first suspect. Police found him in the guest house, couldn't believe for a second that he could be back there and not hear a thing while all this was unfolding. He was questioned. Pretty sure he did a lie detector test and passed. So he was cleared. They found a lot of drugs at the house, which led them to believe it was a drug deal gone bad. The copycat narrative took hold with the LaBianca story. There was also other like kind of theories and stories, like the mafia were linked, just Hollywood decadence in general. There was talk that it might be something to do with devil worshippers linked to Roman Polanski, because he had made the film Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Hopper. I'll go into this in more detail later, but he told journalists he thought it was a revenge attack over a drug deal Jay Sebring had been involved in and had gone bad. Essentially, in pretty much every public theory that went out there, the victims were blamed. Like, they brought it on themselves somehow. There was absolutely no suspicion, though, that it had been black people, despite Manson's expectations. Yeah,
completely missed the mark with that.
Yeah. Police were doing a lot of talking about how hard they were working, but they had absolutely no information on what happened, which just left this big vacuum, which was just filled with rumours and all these crazy theories.
I want to know how they were caught.
Well, we're getting there. Roman Polanski was interviewed by the LAPD, did a lie detector test and everything, even though he had been in London at the time, but he
had
said he was happy to sit down with them. He, actually, there's audio of him at the doing a press conference afterwards. Have a listen to some of that now.
All of you know how beautiful she was. And very often I read and heard statements that she was one of most beautiful, if not the most beautiful woman of the world. But only few of you know how good she was. She was vulnerable. She couldn't refuse any friendship. She had innumerable friends, and I had them too. I'm sorry, I must stop for a moment.
Mr. Polanski will make his statement. I am sure you will all extend to him the courtesy of allowing him to finish his statement without interruption.
But her greatest picture she was doing was her pregnancy. I never seen a woman more preoccupied with it. The house is open now. The police has released it. You will see innumerable books about natural birth, which she was planning. You will see the baby clothes. You will see the room, which she was painting. You will see a lot of blood all over the place, cradles, baby clothes, and that's all.
Aw.
What, but did he not do bad shit?
Yeah. He did, yes. Roman Polanski can't go back to America now because he's wanted for...
paedophilia.
Really?
He, in 77, so whatever, 8 years later, he was arrested for drugging and raping a 13-year-old girl.
What?
Yeah. The night before he was supposed to be sentenced, he found out the judge was going to throw out that he had done some plea bargain for a lesser sentence, for a lesser charge. And the judge was going to throw out that plea bargain and probably send it to prison for a very long time. He fled to Europe and he has never gone back. He's still a fugitive from America. But he keeps working and people work with him.
Really?
Yeah.
Some indie shit.
Foreign language shit, is it?
Yeah.
No, no, in 2002... which is a long time after all this, he made The Pianist, which won the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
What?
Polanski won the Oscar for Best Director.
For The Pianist?
In 2002?
Yeah, he couldn't go to the ceremony because he's wanted for raping a 13-year-old girl. And they gave him the Oscar in 2002.
Hollywood.
Hollywood, baby. Sick.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Wanted for that, but here's an Oscar.
But sure, Weinstein. He was leading how many Oscars?
Morning after the murders. Polanski. Go back to Polanski. Later on, he would say he was not quite thinking straight. He was working with the police a little bit. I think they bugged his phone to record, because they were kind of going, was this a Hollywood person who had some involvement? Like the drugs angle, was there something going on there? There have been a pair of glasses found at the scene. And it seems, at first anyway, they couldn't figure out who they belonged to. And there had been a story, which the story was that Manson himself had returned to the house after the killings and planted them there to throw the police off the scent. I don't think that really holds up though. I've looked into it a bit more. I think that's just a bit of a myth. But anyway, there's a pair of mysterious glasses found. And then Polanski was either working with or hanging around with Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee says, oh, I've lost my glasses. And Polanski said,
glasses.
Yes, so it seems. Polanski said, Bruce Lee wore glasses, and Bruce Lee is one of the only people I know who could kill five people with his bare hands. Polanski suspected Bruce Lee had done it for a while.
Jesus.
Again, later on, he came back and said, I wasn't really in my right mind at the time. Polanski did say to the LAPD, this is something more far out than a drug deal. Far out is the term he used. So the morning after the murders, detectives at the LA County Sheriff Department, who were looking at the Gary Hinman case, totally separate to the people looking at the Sharon Tate case, they get on to the LAPD and they say, we see what happened over there yesterday. Just so you know, we've, like a few days ago, someone killed someone here and wrote all over the walls in blood, and they actually wrote very similar words about pigs. And the official story, which is contested by some, and the LAPD supposedly just said, nah, I don't see it. Jeez. This is a drug deal.
They can't connect the dots between that. Like, they're literally drawing pig on the wall. They're writing pig on the wall.
They love not trying to solve it.
Yeah.
Like, lazy bastards.
They just want the quick one, don't they? Like, pin it on them.
Stick it on Bruce Lee.
Yeah. They also said, by the way, the fella we've arrested for that, we arrested him just a few days ago. He's been hanging around. He tried to claim something else. He got a story, like Bobby Beausoleil was crap under questioning, just kept tripping himself up. And they kind of knew a lot from him. Not everything, but they knew he had been at Spawn Ranch with this cult, with a guy who they thought was Jesus.
And they were like, well, I couldn't meet a cult. But the fella up on the ranch doing the horse rides, stop. Couldn't be him.
They said this to the LAPD, like, the day after.
Jesus.
And they were like, nah, it's drugs. It's definitely a drug deal. It's drugs.
Wow.
Drugs are Hollywood perverts.
Definitely not a cult.
The LaBianca scene is found later that night.
But the LaBianca is the next night, yeah?
Yeah, so the night of kind of 8th, 9th, morning of 9th is Tate, and then 9th, 10th is LaBianca.
Okay.
So kind of the morning before the LaBianca's one is when all the media circus kicks off about Tate, and then...
The LaBianca night is the same night Atkins took a shite on the stairs?
Yes. Duh. Yes, it is.
Just leaving our DNA all over the floor.
Yeah, why didn't you just pick up a pill? Did they have DNA then? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't think they were going to make the connection between a random shite on the stairs in some other part of LA.
Was DNA, when was that invented?
While after this, I think.
They didn't have it when Jack the Ripper was around.
They didn't.
No DNA then.
DNA aside, here we are. This is the days after the murders. The world is shocked and obsessed, and they want answers, and the police having a breeze, just outright refusing to listen to pretty solid tip-offs from other officers. And keep that in mind, how odd that sounds, that they get such seemingly obvious tip-offs and not even entertain them. Because some people bring that up. You know, that doesn't quite... Anyway, this trend of general ineptitude will carry on for quite some time. There's some really like baffling stuff to come in the investigation. The police basically got very, very lucky, I think. So we're going to finish this episode here. In the next episode, we'll hear more about that. We'll also hear about a major police raid on the Manson family, but not for the murders. Then there's another murder by the family. We're going to hear a lot more about Barker Ranch, the ranch way out in Death Valley. As things heated up, they went out to the desert full time. Everything from paying rent with some very rare music memorabilia to murder attempts foiled by a flat tire. Charles Manson going head to head with a rival guru who was trying to deprogram his followers. And how the Manson family basically starts to come apart at the seams.
And will there be more about the shite on the stairs?
Yeah, will there?
No, not for me, but...
Something smells off about...
I suspect you two might bring it up again.
Yeah, I might. Probably actually will.
I'm very curious about that.
I know.
I need answers, so...
Do we actually ever find out about the shite?
tune in next week.
Can't wait.
Thanks to Oran O'Halloran, who helped me out with the research for the entire series. That's it.
See you then.